This is Small Business Conversations with Akona Machoba, unlocking essential advice, opinions, and key issues that affect South Africa's small business community.
Welcome to another edition of the Small Business Conversations podcast, Manweb's weekly SME show highlighting critical issues affecting South Africa's small business environment. In this week's episode, I am joined by the founder of Beauty on Tap, a beauty and skincare retailer which once existed as an online store up until recently. In April, Beauty on Tap opened its flagship store at Mall of Africa after almost 8 years of operation. Surprisingly, at a time when most retailers are working tirelessly to establish competitive e-commerce offerings that will help or appeal to the consumer's growing itch for convenience. Matebe, welcome to the pod and thanks for joining me.
Thank you and thank you for having me.
First things first, congratulations on opening your flagship store at Mall of Africa. Can you tell us about that experience and how different it has been to running an online store?
Yeah, sure. opening a retail store was really difficult. I underestimated how much work and how much thinking is required behind it. I think when people walk into stores, they just think that, you know, somebody put shelves up and, you know, that's it. But, you know, online is really easy. You kind of hand over the development to somebody and you just add products to the back end. But, you know, with retail, it's, you know, curating a full experience, you know, for your customers to enhance, you know, their beauty shopping experience. And so we really had to consider kind of incorporating the online elements that we've always had over the past few years, and incorporating that tech into the store, you know, making sure that the, you know, the visual merchandising or the visuals of the store were also, you know, amazing, because we're not just selling anything, we're selling beauty. And so the whole store build process was just very tedious. We had to think down to the very last detail, but it kind of came, you know, all together at the end.
And how long did that process take? How long did that transition into a brick and mortar store take? When did you start thinking about it?
So I started thinking about brick and mortar, you know, a while ago, but I only really started implementing steps to finally do it last year. And it was kind of, I think the difficulty for us was finding space. A lot of people think that there are a lot of vacancies in your big malls, but they're actually waiting lists. And so finding the right space and the right mall took some time, you know, and after we, you know, said, you know, we're definitely doing Mall of Africa, the process to get the store open, we only had like 3 months to get it together, but I'd already kind of like mapped out how I want the store to look. We'd already spoken about the design. And so it was kind of just then the build and, you know, the merchandising process that was a bit, you know, rushed, but, you know, in the end we got it together. So, it's been a process, you know, of a few years for me thinking through it, but the actual execution, you know, had to be done in just a few months.
And in terms of getting the execution on point, I've seen images of the store and it looks so luxurious. I mean, you did say beauty, you're selling beauty, so it has to be beautiful. How has the response been from consumers coming into the store? Do you think you've been able to merge that online experience with the physical experience to give the consumers what they want?
Yeah, so I think for me, I kind of looked at what international beauty retailers were doing, but I didn't want the, you know, the high-tech experience with screens in the store. I wanted to be a very relaxing but luxurious environment. And obviously, we all looked to Pinterest for ideas. And so I looked at Pinterest. I looked at, you know, how, you know, international retailers are positioning their shelves, what the walkthrough experience is of some of these retailers. And we didn't want people to feel overwhelmed because shopping skincare is so scary for people and so intimidating that we wanted the store flow to be pretty simple, very relaxing as well, and just a beautiful experience. You know, the thing that we, you know, hinge our, you know, shopping experience on is that it's an affordable but luxury shopping experience. And so I think when the store opened, people didn't necessarily expect the store that we opened. I think they just expected, like, you know, a store with shelves in it that was, you know, a white box, and they got something very luxurious. So I think a lot of people have been like saying they feel like they're at home when they're in the store. They don't feel like they're in, you know, a retail store. So I think with regards to, you know, the store design and the environment that we've given people, we kind of got it right.
I mean, like I mentioned in my intro, that the move for me was quite interesting into a physical store, because there is a stronger push now from retailers to go online and strengthen their offering over there. I'm interested in understanding the reasoning behind the store opening, and also what this tells us about the South African consumer and their shopping habits and how they need to be serviced.
So I think, you know, we've been trying to grow our online store over the years. And I think one of the most, I think it's disheartening or maybe opportunistic things about online is that it's still so small in South Africa. And, you know, I think it's about 2% of retail sales are online. And when you think of that number and you think of how much more you can do in your business and how you can scale your business, the obvious decision is let's try brick and mortar. Let's do physical retail and see how it goes. And so for us, it's kind of, we did everything in reverse. We started with online and got that right. And then we said, okay, cool, let's give our consumers an in-store experience. And we've seen a few online retailers doing that. You know, a lot of them started off at the V&A and kind of have, you know, come to malls in Joburg as well. So I don't think we did anything different. I think we followed quite a few retailers that have done the same thing. But I also saw that there was a gap in the market in South Africa for, you know, a niche beauty shopping experience. I think a lot of people have to go to like pharmacy kind of stores or grocery stores to buy skincare and don't really have a place where they can go walk in, you know, and get very expert skincare advice that has both large international brands and niche local brands as well. So there was a gap in the market as well that we tried to fill, which I think we have filled as well now. And so we kind of did things in an untraditional way, but I think it's unlocked a lot of opportunity for us.
Definitely. And in terms of, you mentioned previously that there was a difficulty in terms of getting your store up and going. But what has the impact been on costs? I can't imagine it being cheap to run a physical store with all the challenges, load shedding coming top of mind, and that having its own impact on foot traffic at malls. Can you speak on the cost implications of a physical store and how different that is to online store?
Yeah, so online stores run very lean. Although you do need kind of like, you know, people in your business to, you know, run ops, marketing and so on. Online runs very lean. It's a very efficient business to run. And so online was kind of seamless for us to do. And even the costing of online business is really more reasonable than a store, because of course your rent is kind of just your warehouse or office cost, which is more reasonable than retail space. A store, you know, there are costs that I didn't even think of. Like, I mean, even the checkout, the till point is a cost that you need to consider. It's a monthly running cost. You need a lot of staff members in your business as well, because obviously malls have operating hours that you have to adhere to. And so you can't just have two people. You need to have like a roster. And so there are a lot of like small costs that you don't think of that you're like, oh my word, this is, you know, we have a very large cost base in terms of retail. But from what I've seen, you know, I always say, oh my word, we should have gone into retail or physical retail so long ago, because people are more comfortable with shopping in person. And so, you know, for me, I'm an accountant by profession, so I'm always analyzing numbers and margins and so on. So for me, it's really just pushing in-store sales to make sure that we cover those costs. But of course, our cost base for online is much smaller. And so I think for the business at a consolidated level, we've kind of tried to balance that cost base with online, also kind of contributing to those costs as well.
And then speaking of numbers, I know it's only been roughly over a month or so, or not even
3 weeks.
Yeah, it's just been a few weeks. How has that translated into sales? Are you pleasantly surprised with the response in terms of sales? And what is your forecast looking like on what you've already experienced?
So when I was forecasting the retail store, I completely lowballed it. I clearly had no confidence in myself and the team. So we completely lowballed it and were kind of shocked that if we had run our store for a month, it would have done better than our online stores. And so, you know, it speaks to South African consumers being more comfortable with in-store shopping still, because I didn't think that a single store in one region could give our online business a run for its money. So for now, we're kind of thinking that the because we had obviously opening sales and so on, we did expect that there would be high sales in the first month. And now we're kind of looking to see how that's going to stabilize over the next few weeks so that we can now compare it to online sales. So we're very surprised, pleasantly surprised for our first month, but now it's kind of trying to maintain those sales levels and also just growing our online business as well.
So let's check in a year to see how you guys are doing.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. But I was pleasantly surprised, but I do expect that our walk-in store will do better, I
Okay.
hope.
No, that's encouraging. So you mentioned that you both have local niche products and international big international brands. Can you speak to me on the product mix currently on your shelves and how it's balanced between the local brands and international brands, and how this has actually changed since you first opened in 2015?
So my whole thing with Beauty on Tap is that it was a business that's supposed to support local brands and give local brands a platform to retail, because I was of the thought that when you go into big retailers, the capital outlay that you need as a small brand is so large that you have to keep stock, that we were like, okay, we're going to offer you a consignment model where you can bring your products in. And so my strategy has always been to have more local brands in store than international brands. But of course, international brands are very important because they're more well known and they're kind of seen as anchor brands that draw feet onto online and into the store, where then people will see the other niche local brands and, kind of purchase those. Right now, our top performing brands, and I think it's just because they, available in fewer stores, are, doing better than the international brands in our store. And I think the weighting right now is probably 60% local brands, and 40% in terms of brand presence and sales. We also have our own skincare brand, our own in-house brand that does really well as well. And because that's kind of exclusive to Beauty on Tap, it's the sales at Beauty on Tap are the highest in terms of brands. So, we still want to keep that same strategy of retailing mostly local brands, but of course, we know the importance of international brands as well on our platform.
Wow, that's actually quite impressive. And what then is your assessment of the key drivers of the local beauty market in South Africa? What's contributing to that? And are you seeing maybe new entrants coming into the market? Is there an appetite for new brands?
So I always look at international markets, and in terms of the number of brands we have in the country, we still have like a long way to go. I think it's really important for more local brands to come to the market. I think skincare is based on climate, it's based on understanding your market, and so that's why in international markets, local brands do much better than the international brands that come there as well. And so, in South Africa, I always say, we kind of feel like in terms of local brands, we've hit the ceiling. And we now have to go start fishing international brands, which isn't necessary because there's so much opportunity, and the industry in South Africa, the beauty industry is so large. So there's still a lot of opportunity for a lot more brands to come into the market. Skincare is still growing at a very fast rate internationally and locally. We have great formulators. We have people who understand skin types in South Africa, even hair care, hair types. So there's still a lot of opportunity for brands to kind of like fill certain niches in the market as well. And so I hope that we see a lot more brands coming into the market. And, we have a platform for them now where they can introduce those brands. And so I really hope and encourage a lot more people to give, beauty a shot because it's such a lucrative industry.
And I'm interested in just the international space now. Who are the key drivers of the beauty and skincare market? Am I correct in thinking that Asia is one of the big markets, and of course, the US?
Yeah, so I'm very familiar with the Korean markets. The Korean trade agency is very big on, marketing their skincare brands in South Africa and even just internationally. They'll send us to Expos to go shop skincare there. And so Korean skincare has probably taken over just because their formulations are so advanced. Their focus areas of hydration, and barrier protection have become really popular. And I think a lot of even international brands are starting to formulate around that kind of same skincare ethos. But, you know, in countries like America, you have big retailers like Sephora that have a huge global, you know, footprint, and are also kind of taking niche brands into their stores and putting them, you know, everywhere internationally. And so there's a lot of interesting things that are happening in the international market. And South Africa's on par. I don't think that we're behind or, you know, too behind. I think we're very much, you know, on the same page in terms of the beauty industry. And I think with social media and learning ingredients and seeing what's trending, it's kind of easy to, you know, implement those changes into your brand as well. And so it's really interesting what's happening internationally. And I hope that we can also kind of like start building our industry and taking it out into the world.
No, definitely. I think if there's an appetite and there's interest, then I think growth would be very important. I mean, the Beauty on Tap store, something that I was like so excited about, is that you guys have experts in store that offer clients, customers, insight on the products they're getting. How important is education to your customers and also to the brand? Because sometimes you go to a store, I won't mention names, you're asking for advice on something to use and they're not necessarily educated in the on the specific products, skin types, even in terms of makeup. That's where I've had the most experience, bad experiences, where I'm given like 2-3 shades lighter than what I should be wearing. So how important is educating your customer to the brand, and what has that reception been like from consumers?
Yeah, I think one of the benefits of starting online is that we focus so much on consumer education, because I think people gain comfort with your online store when they see an education element where you're not just pushing product, but are offering insights to them as consumers. And so I think our thing has always been our value proposition, even to brands on why they want to sell on Beauty on Tap, is that we educate the consumer about the product all the way down to the ingredient. You know, consumers these days, when it comes to skincare, shop down to the ingredient and say, you know, what ingredients are in this serum? I'm looking for ABC. And so I think that gave us like a differentiator or a head start in terms of how then we translate that into our retail store. And so for, you know, for me, the biggest thing was I want people, when they walk into the store, to feel like they're walking into the website, that they have access to that education, to that information. And so even our retail staff had to spend time here at the office learning about ingredients, learning about every single product, what's in it, what this product does, you know, what the adverse, you know, effects could be on a certain skin type. And we have an esthetician in the store. Even online, we have an online esthetician consultation service. And so when you walk in and you're talking about, I have dark marks on my skin, you get a curated beauty routine that's built for you. And so I think that's what has made the store popular as well, is that you walk in and you have someone that cares to listen what your concern is and knows exactly then what products to recommend to you.
And something that I am quite interested in is the demographics of your customers. I'm sure in the last couple of years, actually I have seen this, where there is a change from people thinking skincare and beauty is just a female thing and only females care about their skin and how it looks. I've seen a more vocal change in even males coming into stores and looking for skincare that is going to work for their skin type and not just focusing on, you know, the running joke of males maybe using the same body wash for their face and their hair and whatnot.
5-in-1,
Yes, a 5-in-1 shampoo that works for everything mysteriously. Yeah. So how have the demographics of your consumers changed? Are you seeing more males or stereotypically people that wouldn't walk into a beauty store coming in to ask questions?
Yeah, so I think the one thing that really surprised me on our launch day on the Saturday, the 8th of April, is we had so many male customers saying, oh my word, finally, you know, you guys have opened a store. And I mean, when, you know, you see an order online, it can say label. You don't know if label's a male or female. But now you're kind of seeing what those demographics look like as people are walking into stores. And so we've seen a lot of males walking into the store. Some know exactly what to buy because they've been buying stuff, you know, over the years. Some walk in and say, you know, I feel comfortable walking into here and asking you guys for skin advice. And so it's been really interesting to see that dynamic. And you know, we've been looking for a lot more male skincare brands. I think the one thing that men really want is they want skincare products that's safe for men, even though we say it's unisex. And so we're seeing a lot of male skincare brands coming to the market now. And even some brands who just do beard oils are now doing face washes and, you know, face creams. So it's a really interesting market, and I'm really, you know, excited to see what's going to happen in the male skincare market, because there is that growing demand and need for it.
And just to close off the conversation, I mean, this is something that I think you can shed quite a bit of light on in terms of the COVID-19 pandemic and that impact on supply chains in the business, the beauty business specifically. You did mention that quite a bit of your products on your shelves are locally produced, but there's also a significant portion that is sourced internationally. How did the pandemic affect your operations, and what lessons did you learn from that experience?
So I think at the height of it, we were still operating, and that's when we started adding a whole lot of brands to the website. You know, so back then in 2020, 2021, like getting product was impossible. So many brands were rationing stock across, you know, their retailers and saying you can only take 20 of us. And so back then it was really difficult. And I think that's what made us grow our brand offering because, you know, a serum, a niacinamide serum is a niacinamide serum. And so if somebody can't find a particular brand, they just go to the next brand. And that's what kind of pushed us to add more, you know, brands to the website to give people a wider variety. But that's kind of gotten better over the last few months. There are still issues, even with our own skincare brand in terms of manufacturing. There are still quite a lot of supply chain issues that we do experience. Even now, you know, with the Russia-Ukraine war, there's still kind of like those issues that are ongoing. So it's kind of just, you know, forecasting what you need properly, making sure that you always have stock. For me, I get very frustrated when I walk into the store and I see shelves empty. So, you know, it's really important for us to forecast our stock well. And we also engage with brands quite a lot. And, you know, they ask us, how many do you think you'll need over the next 3 months? So it's just planning properly and making sure that you communicate openly with brands, as well on that.
Can you offer some more detail on the issues you mentioned? Is it a matter of sourcing raw materials, packaging? Where are the main pain points right now?
Sure. So our main pain points, and I mean, I have experience from, you know, distribution in terms of retailing, and we also have, you know, experience with manufacturing. So I think, you know, load shedding has compounded that, you know, issue. Packaging is very hard to find right now, and I think a lot of brands who manufacture locally are also struggling with that. And so finding packaging is really difficult. They're very long lead times with that. That's why you'll find that, you know, we're out of stock on certain items for longer periods. I think raw material import is also really difficult. It's also becoming really expensive, just because of the lower supply and the high demand, obviously. And so you see brands escalating prices a lot quicker. You kind of have to forecast that pricing a lot smarter now, you know, and build up fat in your pricing to make sure that you're not escalating prices every few weeks. And so I think the issue is compounded by local economic issues as well as what's happening abroad, in terms of that supply chain. So it's something that we're navigating and that we'll hopefully get right soon.
And I'm interested in just going further. I mean, with regards to these issues you've highlighted, what is the potential for us locally to tap into those markets? Are you seeing any assessments of where we could, as South Africans, try to build up that muscle for ourselves instead of looking outside our borders?
Yeah, so I always say that I'm surprised at like the lack of packaging in South Africa, and I don't know if it's because machinery is expensive or whether there's a lack of skill. But a lot of packaging is really difficult to get in South Africa. Sourcing plastic, because I know a lot of our manufacturers just get plastic beads and then they kind of like burn it here and mold here as well. So there's, you know, a few things where it's like, why aren't we doing this locally? Why can't we find certain paper, you know, in South Africa? Why does it have to be imported from China? And so, you know, I've seen a lot of things where it's like, this is something that's so basic that we can do ourselves in the country, but we constantly have to like import. So I think there is a lot of opportunity in terms of even just beauty manufacturing. Like the whole beauty supply chain is very dependent on international markets. And so I think it's an area where, the private and public sector can look to because of that manufacturing opportunity. You know, even a lot of international brands still import. You know, we have to wait quite a while, and it's, you know, it's really simple to manufacture a beauty product. And so I'm always like, I wish these large international brands could manufacture here as well to make the issue much easier, just like they've done with some car manufacturers. So there is that opportunity at South Africa.
And just forecasting to your own growth as beauty on tap, do you have any appetite eventually to start tapping into those markets and start doing most of those things or some of it in-house?
So I always talk to a manufacturer and he's like, you don't want to run a factory, trust me. But, you know, we see our in-house brand growing quite fast. And so it would be really nice to, you know, open our own factory and maybe look at producing for other brands as well. So there's an opportunity to do that as well. You know, we have a lot of insights on beauty and it's kind of like using that data and seeing what we can do for brands as well. So we're kind of looking at the opportunities. You know, we've always taken advantage of opportunities in beauty on tap. That's why we, you know, opened up our own skincare brand. So we're constantly kind of like reading the market and seeing what opportunities there are. But I can't say for sure right now what that looks like in future.
And that is the founder of Beauty on Tap, Matebe Molise, just painting a picture on the local skincare beauty market and forecasting the growth points for South Africa and where our economy can source growth and supply the local beauty industry. Thank you once again for your insights, Matebe.
Thank you so much for having me.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please like and follow Small Business Conversations and don't forget to share our episodes. If you want to contribute to the conversation, you can tweet me at @Matroba_A or you can email us at smepodcast@manweb.co.za to share your thoughts and suggestions for future conversations. Till next time, goodbye and thank you.
You've been listening to Small Business Conversations with Akona Machoba. To listen to more MoneyWeb podcasts, go to moneyweb.co.za, the MoneyWeb app, or your favorite podcast platforms. MoneyWeb, your trusted source for business and investment insights.